Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock and heavy metal. Two national radio shows, best-selling books, and host of That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. Now, Eddie's bringing his honest, no-nonsense approach and passion to the world of podcasting. You'll hear commentary, analysis, celebrity guests, and who knows what else. PodcastOne.com presents The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, episode number 2 of the year 2015. Great to have you guys on board for another week. And, of course, last week, technically episode number 2, because I crept in under the wire posting last week's podcast on New Year's Day, the first day of 2015, because we post new every Thursday, and last two Thursdays were holidays. So if you happen to have got caught up in the holiday craziness and perhaps you missed those podcasts, be sure to check them out. Last week was my 2014 year in review, where I can't play music on the podcast, but I did a lot of talking about some of my favorite records from 2014 and also some of the things I'm looking forward to in 2015. So that is up and available for you. And then on Christmas Day, I posted a brand new exclusive interview with Dave Lombardo of Slayer. So those are the two that came out in the last couple of weeks, in case you missed them. Like I said, it gets crazy around the holidays. I know everybody's got a lot of stuff going on, so you got to make sure that you do your best to keep up and go back. And the great thing about podcasts, you can go grab them anytime you want in the event you missed it. So be sure to check those out and go back and check out the archives of all the old ones. There's a ton of great ones up there with a wide variety of artists. And check the archives and look back and download and stream, as always, for free anytime you want, anywhere in the world, via podcastone.com or, of course, at iTunes as well. So we'll get back into this being the second year of this podcast. We started, what, maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago, and it's been a blast so far. We've had a lot of great guests. We'll continue to do that. And going forward into this new year, I'm going to continue to bring you cool, exclusive interviews, and I'm also going to mix it up with some of the archival interviews that I always wanted to share with you guys. Some great stuff from my history of 30-plus years in the music industry and interviews maybe you never heard before. So I'll mix in some of those. I got a lot of great reaction to the podcast I did a few weeks ago with producer Bob Rock. And I'm going to do more of those, I promise, with some of the behind-the-scenes guys in the world of the music industry, guys that have produced some of your favorite records. It's so cool getting those stories that you don't hear all the time and those perspectives you don't hear all the time from people like that. So I'm going to get some of those, and I'm going to line up some more producers and some more kind of industry side of the business people to talk to. And I also want to bring in some people that maybe won't be musicians or have anything to do with music. And I've got my eye on a few cool podcasts that I might be snagging as guests on, just people that I was a fan of, maybe in TV or movies or what have you, that I could maybe score for this going forward. So I'll let you know. Coming up in the next few weeks, I'll be bringing you interviews with Jakey Lee, also an exclusive with Stephen Piercy, former singer of Rat, and many more. As usual, to find out what I have coming up on the podcast or anything I have coming up, the website is eddietrunk.com. Please go there, because there's many answers to your questions there, including in the Trunk Report, which is my blog that I update almost daily. I'll let you know what's happening with both of my radio shows, all my upcoming appearances right on the homepage of the website. I'm coming to Cincinnati January 16th at MVP's. January 17th, I'm in Oshkosh, Wisconsin at the Dockside Tavern. Those are my first two appearances of this new year. Check the schedule right on the homepage of my site. Read the Trunk Report. Become a member of eddietrunk.com, and you can stream my terrestrial radio show anytime you'd like and get exclusive audio as well for a very small yearly fee. You get a lot of cool access to audio that way as well. Information on my site under All Access Membership. Buy either of my books through my site, and I just launched some brand new t-shirt designs, including Stump the Trunk t-shirts. You got to have one of those. Just hit the merch store inside eddietrunk.com and check out the all-new designs. Speaking of Stump the Trunk, I better start brushing up because we are about a month away from taping new episodes of That Metal Show for the first time in almost a year. We're going to premiere new shows on February 21st, which is a Saturday, in our usual 11 o'clock spot on VH1 Classic. We start taping February 17th. We'll tape every Tuesday in New York City with that week's episode premiering that following Saturday. So we got some great stuff coming up. I'll announce the guests. I'll tell you how to get tickets to tapings. Again, where I just told you to go, eddietrunk.com and the Trunk Report, as well as other areas of the site. Also let you know what's going on Twitter, at Eddie Trunk, Facebook / Eddie Trunk, Instagram, Eddie Trunk Official. Hope you guys had a great holiday. It was great the way the holidays broke out this year, because Christmas falling on a Thursday, I know pretty much everybody blew off Friday and then ran right into that long weekend. New Year's Day falling on a Thursday, I know a lot of people that blew off Friday and they had that whole long weekend. It always sucks with New Year's Day, because if that lands on like a Tuesday, you got to snap right back into reality that next day and go back to work. It was great because this year a lot of people just burned Friday and you had a long weekend. You had three more days off after the last holiday there. So that was awesome. And hopefully you guys had a chance to get some downtime, spend it with family, friends, whatever the case may be. On New Year's Eve, I was in San Jose, California, actually in Cupertino, California, which is where the Apple headquarters are. Might as well just be known as Apple Central. It was incredible. The whole area is just basically run by Apple computers, their entire campus and everything. And it was really cool to have been there and host Y&T at a place called Rock Bar in San Jose. Really cool new venue, and it was so much fun to ring in the new year with the good folks out in San Jose, California area, and a great band like Y&T. And I really had a blast. I've been seeing those guys forever, and it was so much fun to spend time out there. And I was there not even 24 hours, so it was a lot of flying for a relatively short time to be in California, but I had a blast. I want to thank everybody at Rock Bar for their great hospitality and for bringing me out there. And, of course, the guys in Y&T as well, always turning in a great show. And Y&T is, I'm going to be seeing a lot of them because we're already now in the early part of 2015, and you're seeing already a lot of festivals and concerts announced. I'm going to be hosting M3 again in Columbia, Maryland. Y&T is on that. I'm going to be hosting the Monsters of Rock Cruise. Y&T is on that. April 16th, I'm hosting an event with Y&T, a concert they're doing in Largo, Florida. So I'll be seeing a lot of Y&T, and that's a good thing, but it was great to spend New Year's Eve with them. And if you guys were out there and you were at that show, thank you for coming out. We had a blast, and it was a great way to ring in 2015 in San Jose, California with Y&T. Second time this happened to me this year flying out there. I've been flying, 35 years of my life? I'm 50, so, you know, at least 35 years. I flew a lot in 2014, like 70,000 miles, okay? Never in my life did this happen to me, and in 2014, it happened to me twice. Circling above an airport, and the pilot comes on and says, "We're running low on fuel, so we're going to have to make a stop and get some extra fuel." Are you kidding me? I mean, that's not what you want to hear when you're on a plane. But I'm flying cross country. We're above San Francisco Airport, and they closed the airport because of high winds. And because we were already in the air like 6 hours, they were running out of fuel. So we stopped in San Jose Airport to get fuel, which is where I had to be all the while. They wouldn't let me off the plane, got the fuel. San Francisco reopens, fly back to San Francisco, get in a car and drive back to San Jose. You got to love traveling around the holidays. It was just madness. And that happened to me for my birthday in August. I was hosting a festival in Montana, connecting through Denver. Same deal, above Denver Airport, they close. We're running out of fuel, and I don't even remember where we stopped. I mean, it was like not even a commercial airport. Put a little extra gas in the plane. I mean, are you kidding me? You got planes that fly 20 hours nonstop. How are you running out of fuel at 6 hours? Would it kill you to put a couple extra gallons in? You just don't want to hear that. You got the vision of, like, you know, when your car is a little close to E and the red light goes on. You don't want to hear that ever from a pilot while you're in a plane circling a closed airport. It was crazy. But, hey, you know, we can just can laugh about it now, thankfully, right? So anyway, this week's podcast is a fun one. I think you're going to enjoy this. Two guys, one guy you actually don't hear from all that much at all here in the U.S., and that's Jolynn Turner, the former lead singer of Rainbow. Joe replaced Graham Bonnet in Rainbow, who, of course, replaced Dio. Graham was in there for one album, real good album, too, called Down to Earth. And Joe came in 1980 with the Difficult to Cure record and had a tremendous amount of success. He was under orders from Ritchie Blackmore to get Rainbow on the radio in America. They had not really broken through in a big way in America, and Joe did that. I think people forget that Joe had some huge hits with Rainbow here in the U.S., like Street of Dreams and Stone Cold and I Surrender. And so, you know, Joe's got a tremendous voice, even still to this day. Very different Rainbow was with him than with Dio. Totally different band and way more commercial, but some great stuff. And Joe is a Jersey guy like me. I've known Jolynn Turner for years. Of course, played with Yngwie for a little while as well. And a lot of people ask, hey, what does Jolynn Turner do these days? How come we don't hear about him in America? And the answer is that Joe is very popular in markets outside of the U.S. He still lives in New Jersey, but he actually probably plays in Russia more than anywhere else. He has a huge fan base in Russia. He did an album with Deep Purple, don't forget. And Joe goes overseas constantly, and that's where he makes his money and does his touring. But I was able to sit down with him and talk with him for a little bit, and also the drum legend Carmine Appice. And the reason why they join me together is because they have a new band together called Rated X that just released their debut album. Tony Franklin is in the band on bass, Carl Cochran on guitar. All our friends, Carl, a good friend as well from Jersey, who had a stroke in the middle of making the record and didn't get to play on all of the record, but is on a good part of it. And you'll hear us talk a little bit about that during the course of the interview. But Carmine, you know, I got to see Carmine play recently at a benefit that we did for Carl. I mean, Carmine's got to be in his late 60s at this point. And, you know, you hear about drummers as they get older, they start to break down. They have wear and tear on their body. They can't hit like they used to. They can't play like they used to. Carmine still is a beast on the drums. He is still so good and so powerful. And if you get a chance, man, with whatever band he's playing with, go see him play. He's one of the icons when it comes to drums. So I've talked a lot about this. There's a ton of these sort of super group put together bands. Very few of them last. Very few of them even get to do a live show. Will Rated X be any different? We'll find out soon enough. And I honestly don't know. But Joe and Carmine are good friends, and it was good to spend almost an hour talking to them about this band they're doing together and their individual careers as well. So we'll get into that, a double dip for you, Jolynn Turner, Carmine Appice, together on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. That's coming up in just a couple minutes. Well, of course, it's the new year, and now that you've returned all those holiday gifts you don't need, why not go to Amazon.com and get what you really want? You know the deal. Amazon helps support the podcast you're listening to, the Eddie Trunk podcast, by keeping it free. How do they do that? Well, they offer my show a small commission on the products you purchase. So this show, of course, is free to download or stream each and every week. That's the way we want to keep it. And Amazon helps us do that because they give us a little kickback if you buy stuff through Amazon through my links. Here's what you do. Next time you purchase something from Amazon, first click on the Support the Sponsors banner on podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. And then click on my show page, and there you'll see my great Amazon banner. All right, so that's the deal. Purchase something from Amazon. First, click on the Support the Sponsors banner on my podcastone.com show page. And there you'll see the Amazon banner. You can even use my Amazon banner if you're located in Canada or the UK. Also, to make it easier for all future purchases, feel free to bookmark my Amazon URL. Very important to note, buying this way will not cost you a penny more, but it does help send some money to us from Amazon to help offset the costs of producing this podcast each and every week. So please be sure to do it that way. You can get anything at Amazon, as you know, and by doing it through the sponsor banners, it helps out this podcast. In addition to Amazon, be sure you also support all the other sponsors that you see up there and that you hear about here on this show that help make it possible. All right, we're coming back. Carmine Appice, JoLynn Turner, together on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody, and enjoy the interview.
Hey there, it's 2015, and Podcast One is celebrating all month long by launching a boatload of exciting new shows.
Wow!
First, the king of all podcasts, Adam Carolla, joins forces with iconoclastic comic legend Dennis Miller for a weekly Adam and Dennis show.
If you're asking me whose voice most closely mirrors what's in my head, it's this cat.
Great guests, great topics, and new listeners always welcome.
We're also teaming up with the geniuses who created thechive.com. If it's funny, it's hot, and it's trending, they're on it.
Yes, sir!
And if you're into celebrity gossip, news, rumors, and interviews, you won't want to miss Hollywood Life with Bonnie Fuller.
Hi, Hollywood Lifers.
Finally, straight from the Garden State, Vinny from the Jersey Shore will be dishing pop culture memes with all his famous friends.
We try to just make a joke of everything.
So check Podcast One every day all month long for start dates and episode info. That's podcastone.com.
TrueCar is changing car buying forever. TrueCar helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Just in the first 6 months of this year, over 275,000 cars were sold by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network, and TrueCar users save an average of $3,221 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Just print out your savings certificate and take it to the TrueCar certified dealer for a better, hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the TrueCar mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today. That's TrueCar.com.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, it's Eddie Trunk, and it is another Eddie Trunk podcast, and I am joined right now by two old friends who still look great, even though they are old friends.
Yes.
Rock and roll keeps you young. It's proof of that.
That's right.
My good buddy and fellow Jersey guy, JoLynn Turner. Good to see you, Joe.
Thank you, Eddie. Good to be here.
And my good buddy from New York City, who's been on my radio shows so many times and TV show as well. So I'm playing on the TV show.
Yeah.
Carmine Appice.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good to see you, Carm.
Yeah.
I remember you were in recently on my radio show to promote, I think, the Last King Cobra record.
Right.
You played me a voicemail of Nugent, who saw you playing that metal show.
I still have it on my phone.
And it was a great voicemail.
Really funny.
And he said something like, "Thunder God, I saw you on that TV show," or whatever.
Yeah. And until that wacky heavy metal show, he said.
And until he left you that message,
yeah,
I totally forgot that you had even played with Nugent.
Right.
And what happened since was Ted got in touch with me, and I don't know if you saw, we had him on.
I was away, but I didn't get to see it. But I heard you had him on.
We had him on for a full hour, and he was
He's great. He's great.
And at the end, he picked up the guest guitar player's guitar and started running around the studio playing.
Yep.
And ever since, he's been in touch. He texted me. He's like, and this is funny about Ted. You know, here on the podcast, we can't play music because of publishing. On That Metal Show, we don't have artists play music because it would cost us money we can't afford.
Right.
Most TV shows can, Letterman, whatever. We can't. So you can't play songs. Nugent couldn't grasp why he was unable to play like Cat Scratch Fever. And to this day, he'll call me every couple weeks and be like, who do I need to talk to? Who do I need to come see to get this right? I go, Ted. He goes, who's going to tell me I can't play my songs? I go, Ted, it's a he's a trip, man. He's hysterical.
He's a wild guy. I know Ted since 1967. He's a great guy. I mean, when I played with him, we had a ball.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, everybody's got their feelings about Nugent one way or the other, but I love people that what you see is
what
you
get.
That's right.
And whether you agree or not, they're not afraid to put it out there like they want to put it out, and I love that.
Leslie, my girlfriend, the radio chick, had him on her show, and because he hunts and eats food, you know, that he hunts, when she was on the show, she hired a flaming stripper, right? So she set herself on fire, and they barbecued some meat.
That's perfect.
It's unbelievable.
That is perfect.
And he loved it.
Well, we should tell everybody the reason why you guys are here together is because you have a band together now called Rated X.
Right.
Joe, tell us how this thing came about.
It actually came about through Frontiers Records, who approached me to get a band together to showcase the vocals. And I was like, yeah. I was kind of half-hearted about it because I was out on tour, and everyone knows, or if you don't know, it's the only way you can make money. Nobody buys any more CDs. You all download them for free. So I was really concentrating on live. And then what really convinced me was Carmine gave me a call.
Yeah.
And she said, you know that band? And I said, yeah. He goes, I'm in. And then he was like, what about Tony Franklin? I went, are you kidding? Let's do it. And that really sparked my interest, because this is what you need. You need real professionals, real guys that have seasoned and know the ropes. And that's how it started.
Now, for people who, because we have people listening to this podcast all over the world, and we were just talking before we started recording that there's a huge amount of people out there that unfortunately don't follow the music scene and the rock world as closely as we do, because we're in it. It's what we do for a living. Different things that we both do, but you know, right. You guys as musicians, me on this end. Joe, most people know you, of course, as the singer in Rainbow, but you've done a lot of stuff since leaving the Blackmore world. Mm-hmm. What have you been doing recently? Basically been doing live shows and solo records and stuff, but mostly outside of the U.S., right?
Yeah, mostly outside, and there's a reason for that. It's because, number one, I'm extremely still popular there, and number two, they give me the work. And you have to go where the work is. We all have families and we all have bills to pay, just like everyone else. And we need to make a living. And that's what happened in this new paradigm of the music business. We don't get paid really for CDs. We get paid very little for plays, Spotify or whatever. And as witnessed by Taylor Swift, like she needs more money.
She bailed on it, though. I thought that was kind of cool that she did that.
I thought it was cool, too. It was a statement. But that's what I'm saying. You know, what do? We go live.
Yeah.
And live is the only way to actually support yourself.
Where specifically in the world do you go most, Joe?
Well, I made a concerted effort to play a lot in Russia because with the Deep Purple Rainbow background and even Malmsteen, because we were in the Soviet Union before the peace concerts ever happened.
Didn't you do that live? You're on
live
in Leningrad, right?
That's right. And we played to 22,000 people a night, 11 shows in Moscow, 11 shows in Leningrad. Every night there was over 22,000 people. Can you imagine? So this, with the Purple family and the Rainbow family, they know this music there. So I walk into Russia now, and they open their arms for me. You understand? So it's like you go where you're wanted. You go where you're loved. Now the fashion and everything has changed in the United States. When I say fashion, I don't mean clothes. I mean style of music, everything. There's a lot of rap. There's a lot of pop. There's a lot of everything else. And there's not so many people that are supporting the rockers here.
So Rush is big into rock?
Yeah, huge.
Really?
That's why everybody's going over there.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Eddie, when I started this years ago, there was hardly anybody.
So how many people do you do when you play there on average?
It all depends. When you play in festivals, it's a different story,
right,
of course.
But as a headline, what do you do? 1,000, 2,000, 5,000?
You can get 2,500 people, 3,000. You know, in the festivals, you can get 20,000. It's crazy. You know,
and when you go, do you do your catalog? Will you do a Malmsteen stuff? Will you do Purple stuff? Mm-hmm. Will you do Rainbow? You'll do solo. You'll do the best of Joe Lynn Turner.
Pretty much all of that.
And is the band based there that you use here?
I have a band, a Russian band from St. Petersburg, which is Leningrad, was Leningrad. Now it's St. Petersburg. And they changed the name. And I have a great band. They were playing in a club that I was in one night, and they were super. They were a cover band. And I said, hey, I got up and sang a couple of songs with them, and they were exact because they grew up on this music. And they're called Top Gun. So people out there in St. Petersburg and wherever, they know Top Gun because they're a very popular band. So I hooked up with them, and they started playing all the gigs with me.
Hmm.
And it's been very successful.
Now, Carm, you've done a bunch of different stuff before, and we're going to talk more in detail about Rated X, but you've done a bunch of different stuff, and you continue to do stuff. You do things with your brother, Vinny.
Yeah.
You do the Drum Wars. Give everybody the overview of the Carmine Appice. Carmine will tell you he pronounces his last name the proper way.
Right.
Vinny pronounces it wrong.
Yeah, Vinny's wrong.
We could do a whole podcast.
I know, just on that. We will do that one time.
Appice.
That's my older brother, the way he says it. So he says. But I've been interesting because in the last couple of years, I've got to play with all my bands of my past. Unlike Joe, you know, I've had the bands going from the 60s. So I've been
playing. Not all of them. There's one you haven't.
Which one?
That I love.
Oh, Blue Murder. I tried. I tried.
I'm sure you did.
Yeah. I tried. I couldn't get that one going. But we did. I did two albums with King Cobra. I did album or two with Cactus and some live stuff. We played gigs, played festivals in Europe, Japan. I did Vanilla Fudge. We still do gigs. We play all around the world now. And with my brother doing Drum Wars, we play all around the world and play this Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich kind of drum battle, but to heavy rock music. And in that spectrum of music, we play all the hits that we're known for, including a heavy metal version of Do You Think I'm Sexy? Which
is great, by the way.
Which is really cool.
For people that don't know, just again, because maybe people don't know this because more hard rock people listen to this, it's the legendary Rod Stewart song, which you played on and you co-wrote,
and I
right?
I co-wrote. That's right. And I just got back from China, actually, with something called the Rod Experience, which is a historical tribute to Rod and the band. And I've got members of the Rod Stewart band in it that played on the records, like Jimmy Crespo is in it, Danny Johnson,
myself. Jimmy Crespo play on Rod Stewart records?
Yeah, in the mid-90s.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and he did all the world tours with him. Mm-hmm. He did he was with him 3 years.
I lost track of Jimmy Crespo after Aerosmith. I reconnected with him recently, but I didn't know he had a history with Rod Stewart.
Yep. So we got him, Danny Johnson, who played on the Tonight I'm Yours album with me. And we'd had Phil Chen in it, the original bass player, but he sort of flaked out. So we got Kenny Aronson, another Jersey guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan St. John, keyboard player.
It's Billy Squire's band also.
Right. Yeah. And it's sort of an all-star band, but we go out and we have this video behind us, and it's a sort of like pop-up video, you know? It tells historical things about the band and Rod and stuff that happened with these members of the band. So we went to China with that, and we also did 5 shows in Dallas at a festival. And it's a lot of fun because, you know, I helped write those songs. I helped promote them. I did all the videos and some of the guys in the band, too, and we never get to play them. So this last week when we played them in China, I had a ball, you know. Now, Wednesday I go on tour with the Metal All-Stars, which is a whole metal thing with Joey Belladonna, Chuck Billy, James LaBrie from Dream Theater, Max, Cavaliero from
Sepultura,
and Jeff Tate,
Where are you going with that?
We're going to South America.
Wow.
We were supposed to go to Europe, but they actually just decided to postpone it till April.
Now, there's a lot of those all-star things going on, too, because I just spoke to Nuno Betancourt, who's doing one Kings of Chaos with Steven Tyler and Duff McKagan and Matt Storm,
That's
and they're going
one,
to South Africa. So they're
They're already there.
No, I talked to Nuno. Okay. Well, maybe when people hear this, they've gone.
Yeah.
They've come and gone. But when I'm recording this, they were rehearsing because I actually spoke to Nuno. But yeah, so that's another thing that's going on in the business. You have people with a lot of bands, and then you have these all-star things that go out as well. Yeah. But it sounds like you've got your plate pretty full, Carm, as far as the stuff you're doing.
I'm having a good time. But as I said before, I have pretty much control of my stuff. So like I'm leaving room. As Joe is to do this Rated X thing,
So Rated X, a little background there, so you know what both of these guys have been doing, and now what they are doing now and focused on is Rated X. And I've told you guys when I interviewed you on my radio show, these assembled projects, if you will, there's a lot of them. And it's a little bit of a peeve of mine because a lot of them come and go in a week. You ask the fans to invest in it. As fans, we get invested and excited into this music. And then whether it's a band breakup, it didn't do well, the label didn't support it, nothing happened with it. And a week later, everybody's gone, the band never does a live gig, and it's forgotten in 60 seconds. So this, for you, I know you guys took some – you were aware of that going in, right,
Very
Joe?
Very aware. Let me explain a little about that too, Eddie, because it's tough out there. And we started as a project, but we realized we all wanted to be in a band we could call our own. We've all been in different bands, different projects, whatever. But a band we can call our own to develop it would be amazing, especially in this time, this timeline, where you need that support and you need that break from the record company and all that, and the promoters, because the promoters are the ones that actually pay the bands, right? So if the fans don't support the band and say, hey, we want to see these guys and come to the show, the promoter's not going to book the band. Therefore, these projects probably fall apart because of a lack of work.
Right.
In other words, if you can get work, then at least you have some support to support your band. Would you be in a band if you couldn't make it work? If you struggled and tried to do everything you could to make it work and you couldn't get arrested? You know what I mean?
The thing, I don't have a problem with the people that put the work in to try to make it work. I guess the problem I have is that the ones that come together, when you know in a million years it's never going to happen,
That's
they're never going to get off
story.
The map.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example, and I loved this record, but there was a record that came out less than a year ago, KXM.
Mm-hmm.
It was Ray Luzier, Doug Pinnick, George Lynch. That was a great record, and it entered like top 20 on Billboard in the first week. And literally a week later, they were all, maybe that was the design up front, I don't know, but Doug had five other things. To this day, the band never did a live show. And there was one where fans did buy the record out of the gate, but there was never the ability because they were all in different places to actually support it. And there was the disconnect. So there's different situations. And I guess it's a byproduct of the industry. You know, Peter Criss told me not too long ago, he said, back in the 70s, and both of you guys having had history in the 70s in making music, he said, back then, he said, we toured to sell records because that's how you made the money from the record sales. The tour was just promotion. Yeah. Now it's the opposite.
Yep.
The records are the promotional tool to get on the road to try to make money that way.
It's a business card. Your CD is a business card to say, here's my new business card. Check it out. You know, if you like it, please come, and that kind of thing. You don't make CDs or records anymore to
And the
to
other
promote.
Thing is, too, in those days, what Peter's talking about, you couldn't do more than one thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, because I remember I was asked to join Rainbow.
That's right.
And I couldn't do it. And they got cozy because I was signed to an MCA record deal with Mike Bloomfield and Rick Gretsch at the time. And, you know, so that back in those days, it was you were signed to a label and that was it. You know, that's what you're doing. You couldn't, like, sign to a label and go, well, I'm going to do this project over here because you couldn't do it.
Yeah. I kind of miss that. I miss the fact that, again, not to sound like an old fuddy-duddy, and I know things change and things move forward, but I was saying this to someone the other day. I miss that once a year, every 18 months, it was that destination. It was the only time you were going to get to see your Jolin Turner fan. You're going to get to see him sing one time a year, if you're lucky, in Rainbow. I went to the Spectrum to see Rainbow on the Straight Between the Eyes tour because I don't think there was a local date for whatever reason. It's like, damn it, I got to see this band. I got in the car. I drove down to the Spectrum, and I went to – that was my chance to see Blackmore and Joe and see that band, and that was made it much more special. Now these days when you've got – well, if I miss them this week with this band, chances are 2 months later they're going to be coming by with somebody else, and I'll just see Carmine play drums with that band. I'm not singling you guys out about it. I'm just talking about how the business has changed.
Because we used to sell records and make money.
Right.
Records and publishing. Now everything's getting ripped off. It's ridiculous. Totally. The internet is such a help and a horror.
It's a two-edged sword for sure.
It's a horror because, you know, even like me, I sell drum books. I was an educator. You know, my drum books were selling X amount a year. Now I'm down like 55% in sales because these people get the book, they scan the whole book. I mean, which idiot sits there and scans 95 pages? Yep. I have a problem scanning one page.
Yeah, me too.
You know, 95 pages and gives it away on the internet so that I don't get paid for my work.
Yep.
You know, and my copyright. And it's diluting my copyrights. And it's happened like I used to keep track of, you know, internets that have my records. I can't keep track of it anymore. I go on their free Carmine and Peace records download. I mean, there's sites and sites and sites and sites. You can't get rid of it.
You know, we shouldn't sound like we're – I mean, we are complaining. But
we are complaining.
But not like in the sense – I mean, Bob Lefsetz, for example, I read him constantly, and he's always addressing this issue. 90% of the time it's this issue about what's happening in the paradigm of the music industry and the lack of artists, quote-unquote, the lack of talent, that everybody's entitled who has a guitar or a voice or anything on the internet, and they should be on YouTube. And he's always saying, like, you know, you are not entitled. You need to be dedicated. You need to practice. You need to be good. And we're missing all of that. And there's so much information out there. And there's so many people that the
it's
real
unfocused.
Ones.
It's unfocused.
There might be a guy in Oshkosh, you know, that can't get through, who's a really talented, the new Bruce Springsteen, whatever. Yeah.
Well, that's the biggest thing that I see is that it's a diluted world. There's so many people. How do you stand out? How do you stand out above the crowd? And even for what I do, I see it as a big issue because I'll be calling somebody to set up an interview with somebody and they're like, well, we got a full schedule. And I'll look at the schedule and just be like, not for nothing. Everybody's got to start somewhere. But you're looking at people that have websites that have five hits and radio shows that are internet shows that have 12 people listening. And I'm like, I put 31 years in here, man. I mean, come on. I mean, no, don't put me in that category.
Exactly.
You know, let's get something done.
That happened. We did a gig with Vanilla Fudge in Long Island. And backstage, there was some guy with a video camera on a tripod. And, you know, Vinny, the guitar player and the bass player, and they're doing interviews. And I go, who is this interview guy? Because always on, it's got a cable show on it. He gave us all this BS on how big it was. We went home, and Leslie, my girlfriend, that knows radio and entertainment, we went online and we found out that his show, people watch his show like 97 people.
Yeah, no. Everybody with a microphone.
I've walked red carpets, and you know what's the affiliation? And somebody's like, I got a Twitter feed. Like, okay,
it's unbelievable.
I mean, that's the qualification to be on a red carpet. And then the publicists, the independent publicists, feed into that because they don't care. They just want to give you a stack of names and numbers because it makes it look like they're doing your job, their job because you're paying them. So there's no vetting. It's just like, well, here's a media guy. It's a crazy world we're in.
I'll be honest, and you can like this or not, but when we're doing the promotion now for Rated X, I'm constantly asking the promo guys, wait a minute, what is this station? Who is this station? What is this?
Yeah.
Because
you want to know there's something behind it. You're putting time
because
in.
Because I'm putting a lot of time into promoting this band, Rated X, and I want it to go, and I believe in it, and the music will speak for itself if you give it a listen. However, I don't really need, and I don't want this to sound diva-esque or elitist or anything, but how much I'm putting my life on the line here, and I don't have time for
time is money.
For every. Yeah. You know.
So getting back to Rated X, It's the two of you guys and Tony Franklin, who's a bandmate of yours from Blue Murder.
Yep.
And Carl Cochran, mm-hmm. who's a bandmate of yours, Joe, from yep. your solo band,
That's right.
your guitar player.
Yep.
We know Tony, and Tony's great player and a great guy.
Awesome.
Carl, probably the least known guy of the four of you, but as you said to me just before, Joe, a guitar hero
waiting to happen. Yep.
And hopefully through this record, he'll have that opportunity. The incredibly shitty thing that's happened for Carl is that during the making of this record, he suffered.
Can you say shitty on a podcast?
I think so.
You can say anything you want on a podcast.
So. I think so.
You can say the
Pretty
F
much.
Word
yeah.
if you want
they
to
They try not to for advertisers, but I don't right. think anybody cares.
Okay. Right? Nobody cares.
Here's the beep for you. Boop.
There you go.
Then we just say fuck them. You know,
there you okay. go. Exactly. But Carl had a very serious life-threatening stroke while you guys were making yeah. this record. And yeah. as a result, there's a few tracks he was not able to play on. He's working his way back. He is on a long road to recovery. We're all friends with him. We've all spoken to him. We're all doing things to try to help him. But talk about that. And it happening and how it set this band back.
A heartbreaking event. We were seven tracks in, and he was playing with Flava Flav, actually. Because they had yeah. a Flava Flav and a Flavatrons.
And it was great.
Great.
It was great. They did these rocking. Heavy metal, did these heavy like rock riffs, and he rapped over it. And it was really cool, like Frankenstein. You know, and then he would rap over it, and Carl was leading the pack, man. He was amazing.
Yeah.
And then I saw the first show, and then we left, and he did the second show. From what I understand, he was starting to see blurred in his eye or something in the second show, and went on and did it, and then the next day he collapsed, and luckily Jerry and his girlfriend was with him.
He had a TIA, what they call it, which is a stroke before a stroke.
Yeah.
And if people had known that, he could have probably avoided that and get right to the emergency ward. You got a 4-hour window.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know about this, and maybe we talk about it briefly so that people would know about it and help someone else. The sight gets impaired. The speech gets impaired. They start to twitch a little or what have you. You'd notice this. And if you see that in anybody or your loved ones or whatever, get them right to the emergency
yeah.
room.
Yeah,
because that's a stroke going to happen, and Carmine's girlfriend Leslie, the radio chick, she gave a nice speech on it at the Iridium, trying to educate people
yep.
to help another person, you know. And I think this is imperative for people to know. So this was a heartbreaking event, and it's kind of took the wind out of our sails at first. But we also realized that we had to come back, and we had to come back bigger and stronger than ever for a lot of reasons now. You know, one man down, and usually a team, you know, if a man goes down, a team pulls together even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened here, and I think it shows in this record. We just really powerhoused it right through for a lot of reasons, a lot of emotional reasons. That
right
we
to the
through.
End, right to the mixing.
Yep. Right to the
I
mix.
Mean, we wanted certain people to mix it, and we ended up paying for it ourselves.
Well, we didn't agree with the record company, yeah. you know, so, quite honestly, and yeah. they didn't want to put out any more money, and it's just that simple. I've got no love for that particular incident. However, Carmine and I said, forget about it. We'll pay to get yeah. this mixed by Pat Reagan, who just finished the Mr. Big record, which is a great record, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yeah.
They're all friends of ours. And it came out just fantastic, amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it would have sounded a whole lot different yeah. if we didn't get Pat to mix it.
Yeah.
Well, the record, again, is called Rated X, and it's Tony Carl, who is on the road to recovery. We're supporting him. We're helping out with benefits where we can. And by the time this is posted, we'll have done two benefits, one that we're doing Thanksgiving Eve, and everybody's chipping in to try to help Carl because he's a great guy and he's fighting to come back from this. And
yeah.
You know, Joe, I know he's you're close with him, and he's been in your band for a long time.
He's a real brother.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say about rocknrecovery.net.
Yes,
that's the website. And if anybody wants to send money or whatever or wishes, please visit the website. And just one note about Niccolo Kotsev, who actually finished the record. People might know Niccolo from Brazen Abbott. We've done – a lot of people have done projects with him, me, Glenn Hughes, Jorn Lund, you name it. You know, the guys from Europe. I mean, Brazen Abbott's a great project. And Nick came to our aid and actually finished the record, the four tracks, and he did it brilliantly. So we have a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, did a tremendous job.
Let's talk about a couple other things here with the time that we have. Both of you guys have been doing this a really long time, Carmine longer than Joe.
A little bit. I was swinging at three. When were you?
Joe, when did you, Joe, Fandango was the start for you, right?
Well, no. I started my first professional job. I was 10 years old.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we won't go back that far for me, but I started around that time, too.
Yeah.
At 10?
Ten years.
Well, what was your job, Joe, at 10?
I consider a professional job when you get paid.
Yeah. Exactly.
I made $20 for playing Twist and Shout for about an hour and a half at a Moose Club convention. Or whatever.
More than me.
Yeah, a kids' party.
I made $7.50.
At 10?
Yeah, I would have shared with you.
What was your first, Carm?
Mine was a dance in the Bronx. My band was an acoustic guitar, trumpet, and drums.
Oh, that's a nice combination.
At 10?
At 10 years old, yeah.
Was Vinny even born yet?
No.
There you go.
Vinny wasn't born yet.
Amazing. And but what was the first band, Joe? Well,
the first band that people knew about?
Yeah.
Well, Fandango got a deal on RCA Records.
What year?
72, somewhere in there. Yeah.
And that band never really broke through in the U.S., did it?
No, we were big in Casper, Wyoming.
know, Why?
I don't know. They played it. Again, radio.
Yeah, back then
radio,
especially.
We had radio, and radio actually played it heavy. We were also big down in Florida because of a big station down there that was playing it. And we had pockets that we were big. But overall, the wind came out of our sails because our truck was stolen at the Chicago Fest. It was a big festival. Billy Joel's truck got stolen. Jethro Tull's truck got stolen. There was a ring of thieves coming down from Canada, and they stole our truck. And, it was a real clever way they did it, too. And we lost all our custom amps and drums, you know, and everything, and our racks and guitars. And, you know, I still cry over my Les Paul Jr. that was stolen. And, you know, we had to recover, but the band never really came back, you know, with a heart that it had before.
Yeah.
We tried. RCA tried to give us a little support, but it was just moving on. Then I got the call from Richie, so that was that.
Well, I'm going to get back to that in a second, but Carmine, I mean, so many bands you've been a member of that sometimes I even forget some of them, but, you know, from Rod Stewart to, like I said, Blue Murder, which I love. You were in Ozzy for a little bit. You've had, go on and on with all the bands, but what was the real first band, like the
Vanilla
recording
Fudge.
Band? Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah, that's what
that
I
was
Vanilla
nothing
Fudge.
Before that, right?
No, not nothing.
That recorded,
notable.
That put out a record.
Yeah, that was the first record, Vanilla Fudge first.
And Led Zeppelin, you have the distinction of saying Led Zeppelin opened for you.
That's right. A lot of people opened for us. Frank Zappa opened for us.
I used to go see Vanilla Fudge. I used to go see him.
So many bands.
Yeah. We used to copy you guys.
Yeah. Everybody in the New York area used to copy us.
Yeah. Our drummer did the same cymbal thing, you know, the bass player was doing the Timmy Bogart thing. Yeah. They were huge.
And Vanilla Fudge is still active. You still do that band from time to time, right?
Yeah, we're actually doing a new record. It's called Spirit of 67.
Wow.
All these songs from 67 redone. So we had a niche. It's still the only... We're still the only ones that have that niche, really, you know? And it's sort of like progressive rock, but we do rearrangements of songs, but we create other musical movements within the songs, you know? Which didn't help us when, like, it was on, like, The Sopranos or something, because we never got paid for our music, you know? But we're doing a whole new album called Spirit of 67, redoing some of the great songs from 1967, the way we do it, with a lot of soul and everything. Speaking about a guy like Joe's voice, Mark Stein still sings his butt off.
Yeah, he's great.
What a great singer.
You talk about publishing and people not getting paid. You are a co-writer of the Rod Stewart mega hit, Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Right.
You get publishing on that? You get paid on that?
Oh, yeah.
That's got to be nice.
Yeah, it's nice. My ex-wife likes that, too.
Oh, yeah. Good story.
Yeah. And I wrote Young Turks, too, so that comes through, too. So not as big, though.
So publishing money on...
But it's down.
I was going to say, it's probably down, right?
It's down because of all the same stuff we talked about.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, we've really been raped honestly, artists have been raped. And I'm not trying to sound, again,
no, you're just being honest.
This is just the reality, honesty, people. You know? Yeah. This is it. This is what happened to us. This is what happened. They took away our the sale of CDs. They took away the publishing monies. They took away the likeness and image, anything that we could make money on. Art is
– Yeah, I mean, you know, these people put the stuff up on YouTube of us, you know. I mean, we don't approve this.
No,
it, some of it's horrible. You know, it's taken with a little phone camera. It sounds like crap. It's distorted.
I can't believe the day and age we're in now where people release and expose new music by sending it out as a file. And the way people are hearing music for the first time is on their phone.
That's why there's no icons anymore.
I just got but even the new AC/DC record, they just sent the song out, and it's like, click here to hear the new song. I'm on my computer with, you know, crap little speakers. Like, that's... Man, I used to get a good CD single in the mail. You cranked it up in your stereo. You're like, damn, that's cool, you know. But yeah, it's we could go on and on about how the world has changed. Joe, you mentioned Rainbow, and of course that was before I even knew you personally. Like I said, I was I wasn't lucky, and I wasn't old enough to have seen Rainbow with Ronnie. Didn't see him with Graham because I guess one tour with Graham.
Yeah, it was all he.
And then you came in and replaced Graham in 1980, which was the first time I saw Rainbow live. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts of your time in Rainbow and working with Blackmore, I mean, it was really what put you on the map, but it was really what put Rainbow on the map in America.
I have to say that.
And I loved Ronnie to death, but the truth is, commercially in America, Rainbow wasn't that big. Europe, different story, but not as big in America. And then you came in, for the first time that band had radio hits. And I found this interesting. You've told me many times that when you joined Rainbow, one of the mandates that Blackmore said to you was get me on the radio, right?
Absolutely. That was the plan, right from management, record company on down, PolyGram.
Why did he think you were able to do that?
The voice and the style and my writing ability. He checked out all three before I was in the band, and I mean, I was writing in the studio at the audition. I was pulling out lyrics from my magic bag and singing them to tracks that later became Midtown Tunnel Vision and so on, Freedom Fighter and all those songs. And, you know, he just knew that I had this knack and a commercial voice, and he didn't want me to use the rough voice. He wanted me to use a pointed operatic voice, which is why Rated X now, for example, has a bit more gruff in it and growl. But to make a long story short, that was the plan. And I get hell for it all the time. But I don't think there was any more commercial song than Since You've Been Gone. It's, in fact, in my opinion, it's kind of it's kind of light.
Yeah.
It's almost twee, as we say, you know. And I got hell for making this band so commercial. But we had integrity in that music. That music still rocks.
Who did you get hell from? The fans?
Yeah, well,
the previous fans?
A lot of critics, really. You know, mostly the critics. You know, the fans loved it, obviously. They sold more records, came to more shows. So obviously the general public really loved it. But the critics would be like, oh, you know, what is this fluff, you know, and all this crap. And, you know, and he's gay or he's this or he's that. You know, you take a lot of crap from these people who don't even know what they're talking about. And, you know, and Richie thankfully stood by my side and just said, look, don't let them rattle your cage. Screw them. You know what you've done. We know what you've done. And you've done nothing but well. And we've made magic together. We have a chemistry. And to this day, we still have high respect for each other because of that. And I don't know what's the matter with – you know, Jimi Hendrix once said there's no crime in having your song played on a jukebox.
Mm.
And he was as far out as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Right? But commercial. Now it's called accessible. Okay, accessible. There's nothing wrong with that because most of the world is listening to commercial music. They're listening to instant pop stars who are going to be here today and gone tomorrow. They'll never be in a time capsule. We will be.
Do you – when you joined Rainbow, was it difficult – maybe not so much in America, but Europe, where it was a different story to go there. Was there a backlash toward you because the stuff you were doing was different than what certainly Stargazer and the stuff that was Rainbow Rising and all that stuff? It was so different. Did it go over there, or was it a hard sell?
Well, apparently it did go over, according to the album sales and the concerts. And
you sold well there. So it
sold very well there.
Yeah.
It's my career today. It's a lot of Europe, Russia. I mean, these people. I mean, you go to Russia, and they don't even know who Journey is. Do you understand this?
Wow.
They don't know who Journey is. Foreigner just started to break in there towards the tail end. I spoke to Mick Jones about it when he was first going over, and he didn't want to fly on Aeroflot. You know, I said, no, it's no problem. I fly hundreds of thousands of miles on Aeroflot. So, I mean, this is the way it was because purple, deep purple, leaked through there. You know, that's why Whitesnake could do okay, because it was the family of purple. So it's very isolated. But so I'm just giving you an idea of how in different places in the world, different things leak through and are more popular than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but here, I thought the fans here in the States were overwhelming. We had great tours here in the States and played Madison Square Garden, sellouts all the time.
Do you still talk to Blackmore?
You don't talk to Richie. No, you got to understand.
You channel
that's familiar.
Him.
You got to understand.
One of my guitar players.
Yeah, you got to understand with some of, especially in the English bands and stuff. Yeah. Now, you know, you get messages sent through someone else to someone else. You know, and it's kind of like that. But there's no disrespect there. In fact, in talking to his manager, she first thing she said was, "Richie still respects you most out of everyone. He just thinks that, you know, you and he have the magic."
Do you think that there's the obvious question, any scenario, any hope? Would you like to go back to it? Do you think, I mean, I know he's been doing this Renaissance thing and it seems he's consumed with that, but do you think there's any scenario where he could get pulled away from that and you could do Rainbow? Because tragically, we lost Ronnie, so there's no question as to who the singer would be if Rainbow reunited.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So yeah. Is there a side to you that would like to do it, and do you think there's any chance that it could happen?
I've gone down recently and got hell for it too by saying I would love to do it, and I think it should be done because I think, number one, the fans deserve it. Number two, we deserve it. Rainbow and all the ex-members of Rainbow, which there are many, deserve this honor. And I'm not just – and somebody accused me of trying to go for the money. I mean, how ridiculous. You know, I really believe in that band, and I believe that Richie, on the 40th anniversary of Rainbow's reunion, which is 2015, that's the only time it can happen is this coming year, because it's not going to happen in 20 years. It's not going to happen in another 10 years. Forget it. You know, it's this year that it should happen. So I took a – stuck my neck out and kind of started spreading this rumor, which has truth to it. And I'm going to go off record here and just say, yeah, I believe it should happen. It could happen. And that it would happen if the powers that be were not in the way. And this is not Richie's fault at all. It's people between him and the actual mechanism that would make this happen.
Right.
And I've been fighting it for about 7 months. And what I'm going to say here, and I'm very open about it, and I'm taking a shot. And yes, I would love to do it, and I know so would he. I'm sure of it. I know he's got itchy fingers to play some rock again.
Yeah.
Just to what extent he would do it, I don't know. But even a few selected shows, one album, or something like that would really satisfy and let him go out in a blaze of glory because he's a true icon.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I just – it's criminal that it hasn't happened already. And
it
as
is.
A fan, I certainly hope that it does. And I think I know some of the powers that be that you're referring to, and hopefully that can be fixed and remedied and that can happen at some point. But it's a very complicated situation.
I just want to go on record, and whoever's listening to this, and in front of you guys as witness, that this is for the betterment, not only of me, but I was always into Blackmore as a guitar player, and he's my favorite, okay? And I really want the best for him. It's in his interest to go out in a blaze of glory, and that's the way he should go out, respectfully. And that's what I'm about. I'm not about the money. I'm not about any of that because I've got Rated X and we're kicking ass and I'm not worried about that. And I make enough money.
And you got Russia.
I got enough money. It's really about this reunion to put another album. I think there was some unfinished business between us. A third album that would have made
Bent Out of Shape was the last, right?
Bent Out of Shape, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the live albums.
Right.
But we should have followed it up. And made a third album instead of what actually happened.
I'm sitting here thinking that you're a singer. Most people in the rock business, they point to the singer as the problem guy.
Uh-uh.
Lead singer disease. He's
LSD.
The guy who doesn't want to do it. They can't pull the singer in. And you're a guy who has survived bands with Richie Blackmore and Yngwie Malmsteen.
Correct. That's right.
You. How come you haven't written a book yet?
Oh, every time, you know, I've got three journalists on this. I've got hours and hours of tapes, and I just don't have the time to put it all together. I really don't. I honestly don't. I'm out there busy working. I have a demand for me. So I'm out there working. But that book is there. That book is there. But that book is going to be explosive.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Because I'm just going to tell it all. What does anybody care anymore? I mean,
well, you got to. That's the only thing that makes a good book.
There's nothing. I mean, the truth.
It's got to be.
It's not going to be one-sided. It's just going to be the truth, how difficult it was, what the people. I mean, I'm no day at the beach either sometimes, you know.
Well, did you read Yngwie's book?
I wrote the foreword.
Did you?
Yeah. Don't say Yngwie's book, because Yngwie wrote his own book. And that book's not true. The book.
That's what I'm talking about.
No.
The
no.
book that
Anders Tegner's book.
Who?
Anders Tegner.
I don't know that book. Yngwie wrote an autobiography.
Yes, he did.
Where he said, alluded to you that it wasn't the I don't know. I don't remember. I read it, but I don't remember what he said. But it sounded like he thought he took his band in a place it shouldn't have gone or something.
He's full of it, because that was exactly what PolyGram wanted again.
I would think.
I made his biggest album. Right. He hit the world stage because of that album, The Odyssey. Let's let the truth be told, whether you like it or not, people. That's the truth, okay?
It was, without a doubt, the biggest commercial success
and
he had.
Put him on the map. And then he turns around and says, number one, I didn't co-write the songs, and number two, it was too commercial. Why don't you give back the money? Why don't you give back the fame? Why don't you give back what made you happen, man? That's what made him happen. And I'm sick and tired of hearing I wrote sentences, his quote. Sentences? Those were my lyrics, my melodies. You got to be kidding. And anybody that heard it knew that was the only turn of style. And they pulled me in. PolyGram pulled me in and said, this is what you're going to do. What you did for Blackmore, you're going to do it for Yngwie. And he went along with it. Now he wants to stab me in the back about it. I got a problem with that.
Mm. How long ago? How long did that whole thing last? A couple years?
We were real successful on our tours and everything.
But what did it last? 2-3 years, right?
At least 3 years.
And one studio record and a live record.
And then the Russian tour, which was huge.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, 22,000 people a night for 11 shows in both cities, Leningrad and Moscow.
So your whole thing, and we're going to get to you in a second, Karin, but your whole thing with Russia is really the fact that you are part of that purple slash, to a lesser degree, Malmsteen world, which in a way, even though not directly Yngwie is part of Deep Purple, he was certainly a Blackmore descendant.
Yes.
So, but you were in Deep Purple for a record. Mm-hmm. You were in Rainbow.
Deep Purple. Family tree.
The family tree. And because of, you know, I've always said so many times, in America, Deep Purple does not get the respect.
They don't.
Not even close. People listening in America, outside of America, Purple means so much more to so many people.
Huge.
So it's amazing that your career, and why people say to me all the time, why doesn't Joe do more in America? Those opportunities are so much greater for you because of your offshoot of that family tree.
That's absolutely true. And you're wanted there. There's a demand for me there. So you go where you're wanted. Would you try to struggle through the mud if you had a clean road to go? Of course not. Mm. So what I'm trying to do here is also get the people in the States, you know, the fans back on track. Instead of sitting on the couch and looking at the TV, come out to the shows. We're still pounding it out here. Mm. We're still making great records, rated X.
Yeah.
You know. Get off the couch. Come on.
The one thing about both of you guys that is incredible to me is you've both been doing this for decades. As you said, Carmine, a decade or two more than Joe because you're older. You're a drummer. Joe's a singer. The two things that age, I see as a fan, has the most impact on musicians. Drummers usually can't hit as hard anymore. They lose their ability to play. They lose their chops. You are still, I mean, we had you play on that metal show.
Right.
You are still
kicking it.
A monster.
Yep.
What do you do? Is it luck? Is it the style you've played? Is it, do you still practice?
I have to stay ahead of my brother.
It's all Vinny's fault.
It's all his fault. No, you know, I don't know, to tell you the truth. You know, I was never a druggie. I was never into alcohol. I never really drank a lot of beer. Drank a lot, you know. So, and you know, I've always been health conscious, and I was never a big meat eater. I've been, you know, when I played with Jeff Beck, Jeff was a vegetarian, so I sort of went along with that. Because I almost was like that all my life, anyway. You know, I never liked stuff. If I didn't like the way it looked, I wouldn't eat it.
You know, so I, you know, go to the gym. I'm a study drummer. You know, I know how to hit a drum. I know the technical part. I know the technique, and it's my passion. You know.
Yeah, do you even with all that passion, as you get older, you physically break down. Do you have any issues?
I have the shoulders that I took care of. You know, they're not 100%. But I mean, you know, if you look at me playing like in 1969, there's a video on YouTube of us playing, I think it's on the David Frost show with Vanilla Fudge. I mean, I was really an animal when I was a kid. I mean, my sticks were flying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was a monster, you know. I don't do that no more because I found to play like a karate chop, to hit the drum like a karate chop to get the power out of it without having to go like this.
Loudest drummer in the world.
Yeah, you know. And, you know, from doing that, I don't have to raise my arms up anymore like that, you know. But I'm still playing hard and maybe even a little more technical now, you know.
I think you're playing better than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I'm having a good time playing now. I think I appreciate it more, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, I just love playing. I love playing stage. You know, you're talking about the family tree of Purple. Purple started out as a Vanilla Fudge clone back in the day. You know, their first album,
Hush.
Richie will tell you that they wanted to be Vanilla Fudge, you know, and then they developed. But back then, with that Purple, White Snake, all that tree, was the same tree that we came from, which was the Vanilla Fudge, Jeff Beck, Jimmy Page, that tree, you know.
That's true.
Where, you know, we ended up playing with Jeff Beck, and then I ended up playing with Rod Stewart, and it was all... We had an album we did with Rod where we had the family tree put on it. And it was, you know, Vanilla Fudge went into Cactus, and Cactus went into this, and then I went into Rod Stewart. Then we went to Jeff Beck, and then off of Jeff Beck, Rod Stewart came, and then I went into Rod Stewart. So it's like the same kind of thing, you know. So there was a lot of connections back then.
How many of those guys, these iconic guys that you've played with, from Jeff Beck to Rod Stewart and on, how many of them are, if any, are you still in touch with on any sort of regular basis? Do you still hear from any of them? Do you talk to any of them?
Funny enough, I just got invited to Rod's 70th birthday party.
That's cool.
Which was nice, you know. When I came back from China playing my Rod Experience show, I got an invitation, which is nice. But I saw both of them about 3 years ago in L.A. when Rod went to visit Jeff at his gig. I went to the gig in the afternoon. Jeff, you know, we got a hold of Jeff. We did the sound check. And Rod was doing People Get Ready with him, which I'm on, you know. And it's because of me that Jeff actually did that song, because he was staying at my house partying, and we went to my buddy Dwayne's house, and we wrote the song, put it together. And I said, you know, this sounds like People Get Ready, Jeff. And he goes, yeah, it does. So he said, you know, maybe we should get somebody to sing. Let's get Rod to sing it. So me and Dwayne Hitchings, my good buddy, we were connected with Rod then. So we called Rod up and brought the tape and said, here it is. So Jeff was singing, Rod was singing with Jeff that night. And then I went down to the sound check and hung out, you know, and so both of them. So
there's two things that you've done in your career off the top of my head that were kind of never really, you know, went probably where they should have. They only kind of got to a certain point. One was Ozzy.
Right.
You're in the video for Bark at the Moon.
Yep.
But you didn't actually play drums on any of the tracks, did you?
No, but I was the associate producer to help the drum sound that they had, which was terrible.
Who was playing, actually? Tommy Aldridge?
Tommy. They fired Tommy, brought me in to come in and help him finish the record with Ozzy, do the vocals, and help with the drum sound, because the drum sound, they told me, was awful.
And Bob Daisley would have been involved at that point, too. Still,
Bob
right?
was the bass player. So
Bob Daisley is the unsung hero behind all of Ozzy.
All that stuff.
Writes, played bass, everything.
Every lyric.
Bob Daisley put out a book, speaking of setting the record straight, called For Fact's Sake.
Yep.
Read it and learn what really happened and who was really behind the creation of Ozzy stuff. Right up through No More Tears.
Yes,
through that record.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Obviously other people had a role, Randy, Zach, et cetera, but Bob was there behind the scenes the whole time,
doctoring. All his
song
stuff.
It's amazing. Right.
He's a great songwriter and a great riffer.
Yeah.
He comes up with great lines, you know. And he's like He's a monster, Bob.
I'm in touch with him all the time. Bob.
Yeah, I was, and you know,
and the Ozzy thing, when I went with Ozzy, you know, I wanted to be there. I wanted to stay there and write songs and produce and help, you know. And Sharon just didn't, Sharon, you know, thought my name was too big. She canned me.
Yeah,
that's what she told me. So you need to start your own band. We need a side man. So we're getting Tommy back. Because, you know, you had J.J. Jackson on MTV saying, here's the Ozzy tour with legendary drummer Carmine Appice. They weren't pushing me. They were pushing Jakey Lee, you know?
Right.
Amazing.
And I was getting a lot of press and a lot of attention. I guess she didn't care for it, so.
Not surprising at all when you know the history.
And what's the second one?
Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd was only a session.
What did you, but aren't you on the record?
I'm on Dogs of War. Oh,
you really? Play on Dogs of War?
Yeah.
And you do all the percussion on that track?
On that track, yeah.
So how did that come about? Joe Lynn didn't even know that.
I see, Joe? I'm impressed.
Well, it's funny because when we did Blue Murder, me and Sykes were both on the charts next to each other. Pink Floyd was here, like number eight, and Sykes was number nine with Whitesnake. So we would say, wow, look at that. We're right at chart buddies.
87, yeah.
Yeah. But I got a call from Bob Ezrin. He said, I got a band that I'm recording. It's just screaming for Carmine drum fills.
He didn't tell you who?
No. So he said, call me back. You know, on the message machines. I called him back. Yeah, but hey, Bob, what's up? Because, yeah, look, I'm recording this band. I said, who is he? He goes, Pink Floyd. I go, Pink Floyd? What happened to Nick? He goes, well, Nick's here. Nick's calluses are soft. They want some new blood. And this song is just screaming for your kind of playing. I said, okay. So I went down and did it.
So what happens in a situation like that? You just show up, they pay you a fee, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You go in, you
and
cut
I get
this
all
stuff
the gold albums.
And you get, you see, you do.
Yeah. I got, I don't know, 5 platinum albums from that. Yeah.
That's amazing, man. Yeah. And just get a call like that one day. And that's a trademark of Ezrin, if you know his history. If he feels that somebody's not executing what he really wants on a recording, he doesn't care who it is. He'll call in somebody credited or not to do it. The story goes he did it with Aerosmith with Get Your Wings. He did it with Kiss early on. He's done it with Pink Floyd, with you. It's interesting.
It's funny. Not only me, Jim Keltner played on it too.
Yeah.
I don't think Nick played on the record at all.
Amazing.
How about that?
That's a producer, though.
Yeah. That's old school,
man.
I don't care. Get out. It's not what I'm hearing. I want you out. Uh-huh. Nick Mason, who cares? You're out. Carmine's coming in.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Joe, have you ever been called into stuff like to sing backing vocals or to do stuff that was uncredited or under the radar?
Well, sure, but most of the backing vocals I ever did is credited. But I was in Foreigner for 2 weeks. I got a call from Bad
Lead singer?
Yeah.
What year was that?
Say You Will. That's only how I can pinpoint it.
It's like Agent Provocateur period or something like that. So wait, Lou didn't make shows?
He was,
or
no, he was fighting with Nick, and they called me in, and I went up to right here in New York, went up to the roof and where they were rehearsing, and they went, this guy's got the sound. He sounds like him. So here I was just coming off the Rainbow stuff, and I went, well, what am I going to do? And then I get home, and I get a call from Badco before Brian Howe got in. That's when they got Brian in after I said no. And I went, what year was that? Because it was Purple. Then I went with Purple or something, and that was it. It was like a crazy time. But I did backgrounds for almost a lot of people, that ghost backgrounds and everything else. And you
give me a
paid.
Few.
I don't know. I was on – well, these weren't too ghosty, like Cher and Michael Bolton. And, you know, I was like the hot new background singer because I was a hot lead singer, you know, and I got paid really well for it. Who else? Oh, there were so many people.
You did commercials.
I wrote songs for Jimmy Barnes, and he just put it out with his son, as a matter of fact.
You did TV commercials too?
Oh, big time. Michael Bolton got me into the TV, into the commercials.
Like what product? Anything we'd know? Like
you name it, Gillette. And I would disguise my voice and do voiceovers too.
But as far as singing, like the best a man can get.
Yeah,
like,
I did all that. I did Miller, Budweiser. Michael came up to me at the China Club. Remember the old China Club?
Sure. Yeah,
and it was a big star-studded night. Bruce Willis, Bon Jovi, everybody was there. And he goes, hey, you gotta do these jingles.
Who's this?
Bolton.
Michael. Okay.
Yeah. He says, you got to do something. I want to introduce you to the jingle queen, Susan Hamilton. And he says, what, jingles? I ain't doing no jingles. I said, I'm a rock and roller. He goes, no, you don't understand. He goes, big money. And he goes,
Mark Stein did a Miller Beer and all that.
I did Folgers was Feels Like the First Time so well that the band called Mick up and wanted residuals for that. And he said, no. He goes, that's Joe Moderna singing lead. And he goes, and these are my drum fills from outtakes that I copied. And they all thought it was them.
Was Michael Bolton doing jingles too?
He was doing Gillette. He was doing all the manly stuff. Gillette and, Folgers. I was doing all that stuff.
Because Michael Bolton, for people that don't know, was a hard rock singer before he became Michael Bolton. Blackjack and the first two Michael Bolton records are hard rock records.
That's right.
And then
he
became this whole other thing. But I remember seeing him back then. Fool's Game and all that stuff.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it was good.
She did the same thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So he turned me on, and I went down to a session, and that was it. And next thing I know, I was doing all these jingles, big jingles, flying everywhere, Chicago, L.A., for doing jingles.
Picking up on what I was talking to Carmine about, Joe, and we'll just take a few more minutes here. I could talk to you guys forever here. Carmine, what he does, physical, playing drums, whatever, it's remarkable he can still do it. I can't tell you. The thing that I like in any music that I like, first and foremost, I tell people all the time, I have to like the singer. Doesn't have to be technically pitch perfect singing. No. It just has to have a vocal quality that I like, right?
It has to have some heart.
Your voice, after all these decades, that's another thing with age. You see a lot of guys that just can't do it anymore. They can't hit the highs. They can't sing like they used to. They can't. You somehow, there's only a handful of guys that can still do it. I just saw Aerosmith, Steven Tyler, still ridiculous, kicking it. Robin Zander, still ridiculous.
Glenn Hughes,
Sammy Hagar, still unbelievable.
Kicking it.
There's only a few.
Yeah,
you're one of them. How do you do it, man? I mean, do you have a process? Is there a regimen? I mean, are you aware of it? Do you feel you've lost some things over the decades?
No, I think I've gained some. Honestly, if you listen to the Rated X album, I don't think there's a. I think it's one of the better recordings they've done. And that, the Malmsteen record, brilliant, and all that stuff. Even the Rainbow stuff, I was constricted a little bit because of what Richie wanted. You know, the point on the voice and all that. And a lot of people say, why didn't you sing like that before? And I would say, well, because Richie really wanted this. And this was the sound that we were creating. You know, I can do a lot. It's like Carmen. He could play all styles. I'm sure of it. You know, and I can sing all styles because we grew up in an environment jazz, you name it, soul. We both grew up on funk and soul. So, I mean, how do you keep this same way Carmine's saying? Just stay healthy. We had to give up the bad habits. Give up all your bad habits. I mean, I went through the 80s and I survived. I came out the other side. I'm lucky because I had my share of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. There's no doubt about that. We were living the dream.
But you were legend in some circles.
I guess so. But, you know, whatever. But we change. People change. I don't think I've changed my passion for it.
Right.
But I think you change my lifestyle about it. And I like to keep a little bit more of a cleaner lifestyle, healthy. My wife, Maya, she just keeps me straight and narrow on organic foods and in the gym every day. And I love it. I feel great. I look better. I'm down to my fighting weight, and it's fantastic. And the moment I hit this record, I saw the fruit that was
of all the hard work. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is easy to sing like this now.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're not wear and tearing on your body.
Yeah, you've got so many sides to your voice, but there's always that great power in it. And I've told you many times, speaking of what you did with Blackmore and Rainbow, one of my favorite vocals you ever did was like Freddie Mercury-esque, was Can't Let You Go from Bent Out of Shape. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you hit those notes, you still can do that.
I have a question. Do you sing at all?
No. I wish I could.
I could just tell by that note you just said.
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding me? Why do you think I do this, Carm? I can't play a note. I can't sing. I can't do anything, man.
Thank God for that.
But, yeah, that's why I decided to do this side of the business. But, I always, to me, the first thing when I hear a band, I have to like the vocal.
Singer, yeah.
If I don't like the vocal, I'm done. I don't care how good the rest of it is. I got to like the singer.
Yeah.
And, Carm, you've been fortunate enough to work with some great ones singers. As far as singers as well.
Right.
And obviously players and musicians.
I mean, look at Rod. I mean, Rod.
Killer.
Jeff Beck Group versus then when I play with him with the Faces and I play with him versus what he does now. I mean, he did have some sort of cancer of something. But, he's not the same that he was.
Yeah,
Plant's not the same.
No, but the other thing is technique, you know. I mean, my teacher, my dad, God bless him, he said, if you're going to build a house, you got to get a hammer. So I should go for vocal lessons because I was a guitarist primarily.
And you don't even play guitar on stage at all, do you?
No, I would like to. There's recently some because but you're going to play with Malmsteen and Blackmore. I did play with Blackmore, as a matter of fact. The only guitarist who ever. I'm getting the evil eye here. I'm the only guitarist who ever played another guitar with Blackmore on stage. He handed me a Silver Anniversary Strat. I was using my Gibson SG, and he said, "No, play this if you're going to play." And he liked the way I played. In fact, he walked off one night, and I played the solo to Smoke on the Water pretty exactly because I knew it from my cover bands. And the journalists were like, "Not bad, Joe," you know?
So you think you're a good guitar player? Are you confident in your ability?
Yeah.
You know
what's I'd have to woodshed right now,
which
I'm getting hell for that I don't because I'm busy doing other things in businesses and whatever. But my guitars are still there. I've got all kinds of 60 vintage guitars. I still love it. And someday, maybe I'll play with Rated X.
I was going to say, but singing was always the number one passion. That's what you wanted to do more.
Guitar playing. Sang by accident.
Really? You know who's – the reason I bring that up, you know who has the exact same thing?
Huh.
Miles Kennedy.
Miles
is the singer in two mega bands right now, Slash and Alter Bridge, right?
Right.
Talk to Miles. He never wanted to be a lead singer.
Nope.
He just stumbled into this.
Me
he's
too.
Got a great voice, but he's a trained, brilliant guitar player.
Yep.
He just so happens to be in one band with Mark Tremonti and one band with Slash. So as a result, now in Alter Bridge, he plays a lot of guitar on stage.
Yeah, he plays some guitar.
And on the records. But in Slash, he hardly plays at all. But he said to me many times, that's why if you watch Miles on stage, that's why all the other musicians love him because he isn't the lead singer, in-your-face, out-front ego guy. He's very – but as a front man, he's more reserved than most would be because it's not – he tells me on stage he feels naked without a guitar.
Well, you do. And when I joined Rambo, your hands get big. Everything gets – can you imagine not playing – well, you come out
When I did that thing for Carl, I couldn't play at Carl's Last Benefice. My shoulder had the stem cell shot. So we did Do You Think I'm Sexy, and I said, well, I'll just stand there. But I just couldn't stand there. I have this snare drum thing that I put around my on a guitar strap, and I play the back of the snares with
my
hands.
Like a high school band with a
drum. But
sort of like a banjo.
He does it on the Rated X album.
But it's great. It's a great sound. It's a really cool sound.
Snare.
And I sang the song up there at the front, you know, in front of the stage, playing my thing, and I felt better.
It was great.
That's amazing.
But it's really weird without your instrument in front of you. You get really awkward, and you have to learn.
So you get used to it, I guess.
But I'd love to do it. One of the main things is that if you're not making enough money and you're not carrying enough roadies, et cetera, you know, what are you going to do with another amp and another guitar?
Right.
It's just tough up there. So you grab the mic and you sing for now. But I would love to just play back guitar or double leads.
Yeah. I want to wrap up with two questions for each of you. The same questions, actually. You both have done a ton of things musically. Carmine, people probably know all the different things you've done, more so countless bands and projects and what have you than Joe. But if you think about what Joe's done, really your history from, you know, the Turner Hughes stuff to your first band, Fandango, all this stuff that you've done, we're not talking about your jingles, but your bands.
Mother's Army,
which you and Carmine, right.
So, and Bob Daisley.
Right. Starting with you, Carm, of all the bands and records you've done, which one is like, do you feel didn't get its just due, which should have made it, which the thing that was like the one that sticks with you that it should have broken and it didn't?
Well, two really. Yeah. The first King Cobra record and the first... And that Blue Murder record.
But both kind of did well. I mean,
but they didn't break.
They didn't break huge.
Break.
But, I mean, my God, the first Blue Murder record is
they didn't break.
People absolutely worship it.
I know, but it didn't say sold 150,000 units in the day when everybody was selling 8 million copies.
Why do you think that was?
I think it was because we had no management at the time. You know, Sykes had the whole thing arranged, and he had... And, his father-in-law, his stepfather was the manager with a lawyer and somebody else. There was really nobody there minding the ship. You know?
Do you buy into the conspiracy theory some have that
it
was the kibosh was put on the record because it was also on Geffen and there was heat between him and Coverdale?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't
so you just think
it.
That it was just bad management?
No, because I just saw what was happening. We were on Bon Jovi's tour with Bon Jovi and we had no manager. The record was out. There was like nobody working the record company. Come on.
It's all about relationships.
And why didn't King Cobra go, do you think?
Because Capitol blew it. They totally blew it. They didn't they didn't put what they needed to do behind it, you know.
So you guys play the Ritz.
We played the Ritz, but we toured with Kiss. I mean, come on.
Well, at the Ritz, I was standing next to Paul Stanley at the show, I remember, at the Ritz. I missed the Ritz. I saw so many great shows.
It was a great show. And, you know, I mean, we had 1,000 people there at the Ritz.
I remember that.
We sold out Country Club two nights, 2,000 people. You know, we did okay, but we didn't – we sold 100,000 records. You know, we sold 50,000 less than Blue Murder. You know?
And then King Cobra, you did again recently a couple records with Paul Shortino singing.
That was for fun.
Because your singer, original singer in King Cobra, Mark Free, has become a woman.
Yes.
So we talked about that in past radio interviews, but that's exactly. A pretty crazy thing.
That one, you know, that one blew my mind. But, you know, and because of the state of the business, we just did those King Cobra records for fun. Because if we were to break it down, it's probably hourly wages would have been less than what we did for Rated X with all the time we put it in.
Speaking of Rated X, as the lead singer in Carmine's new band, Joe, is there anything you'd like to tell him about any changes you're feeling in your sexuality as far as...
No, I'm okay,
please,
Carmine.
Tell me.
I'm fine the way I am.
No, thank you, honey.
Are you kidding? I get enough crap about that.
You know what's funny?
I'm all about women, and I get accused of being gay. It's
really? I never heard that about you.
All the English assholes
really?
Do that. Yeah, they do.
So you're not about to become...
No, that's what somebody says when your girlfriend likes the singer.
Right.
You know, he's gay. What do you like him for? You know, meanwhile, you know.
Carmine's got nothing to worry about. You're not going to become Jocelyn Turner on
Even though I,
Josephine Turner.
No. And the band that I would pick is Mother's Army, which Carmine was on as well. And Mother's Army was an amazing
And that got away
band.
From me because it didn't
I'm
really come out in America, and I want to hear it.
I'm bringing you a box set.
I want it.
Wednesday.
So Mother's Army was you, Carmine.
Jeff Watson
from Night
Bob
Ranger.
Bob Daisley.
Wow. Hard rock stuff,
The third album.
No, concepts.
Yeah, concepts? Yeah.
We did a whole concept album called Planet Earth that is absolutely from start to finish.
Sort of like Pink Floyd-ish.
Pink Floyd-ish. Yeah. And yet rocking. And then it goes into a whole nother genre. Then it comes back into the rock. You will never believe what we've done. This is really unbelievable stuff.
Wow. So now, I don't need to be on drugs to enjoy it. It's
no,
not, that
not
trippy,
at
right?
all. But you're going to feel
like
how
musical. Well, he's
going to
give you some drugs with that too. So.
And then, a little hit of acid in the CD.
Then Carmine took off of the third album where we had Ainsley Dunbar, who is no slouch at all.
Right.
On drums.
Right.
So, I mean, the box set, you'll get it, Eddie, and you'll start to say, wow, whatever happened to this band?
All right, I got like 8 minutes left.
Okay.
I want from each of you, you have played with some unbelievable characters. You spent decades on the road all over the world. Give me one of, Carm, start with you. Give me one of your like craziest moments, rock and roll stories of your life.
Say that. You can never think of one.
You got it. It's got to be something with Blackmore.
Well, I mean, there are so many stories.
All right, I got one.
Oh, good. Go.
I got one.
Because I'll think of mine.
Okay. BBA, Jeff Beck, Bogart the Peace. We're in On the Road. Album's out. Album's in the top 10. We're going. We're in Atlanta. We wake up. Say, what time's the sound check? Gig's off tonight. Why? Jeff Beck went home. What do you mean Jeff went home? Jeff went home.
That's happened with Blackmore already.
He went home. So that was
Why
the end
did
of
he
it.
Go we, home?
Because he had a fight with his girlfriend, and he went home.
So what happened?
So the tour ended. That was the end of it. We had a full semi-truck full of stuff. We had a full road crew, me and Tim. We went home. We were pissed. And that was sort of the down start.
That was the end of it?
Well, it wasn't the end. It sort of started the end, you know, and then we continued, but it was never the same. Because, you know, when you think you got like three guys that are focused on one thing, all of a sudden, you know.
Women always seem to loom large in some of these stories, don't they?
They sure do.
Jeff Beck walks away because he got in a fight with his girlfriend.
No, it's all the Yoko stuff, man.
Yeah,
it really
people,
is.
If people had any idea how much of that still goes on behind the scenes, it's
absolutely
unbelievable.
Just look at Spinal Tap, and
it's
the parody
so
of the
true.
Whole thing.
So true. Joe, what do you got?
Well, I've got too many to mention,
Give me a couple good ones.
Well, I'll give you one with Malmsteen. We were doing a huge Polydor convention at the Cafe Opera, which is a beautiful opera house, later turned into a disco bar, and you name it. And we had artists from from pop and rock and whatever it was on Polydor, the main company, and Polygram. So this was filled with stars and everybody. I mean, you know, everybody was there. So I'm talking to Magnus, the president, because there was some nonsense going on about Malmsteen partying too much, me too. All this stuff was going on, and the record was doing very well. So he said, so how are you boys doing? So I said, oh, we're doing great and nothing. And all of a sudden I heard bing, bang, boom, and it was Malmsteen in a fight in the back. So I said, I got to run. I grabbed John Norum from Europe and Glenn Hughes, and I said, come with me. And we started to try to break up this fight. And it was him and Thomas, because apparently his girlfriend was kissing Thomas. They were all drunk.
Oh, wait, who's Thomas?
Thomas was Inge's best friend. Oh. And it was all crazy, right? So the bouncers jumped in, and they didn't like Inge anyway because he was arrogant all the time. And when he come in Stockholm, this is in Stockholm, I should probably preface that and say it's in Stockholm. So finally, you know, Inge's all bloody and everything, and he's beat up, and they throw him out. And me and John and Gunn go, oh, man, let's just get the hell out of here. So we come walking out the door, and we go, all right, let's go to this Club Medley. There's a lot of chicks there. There's a lot of rock and roll. Let's go over there and have a few drinks. And we hear, hey, guys. And we turn around, and he's coming out of the bushes.
Inge.
Yeah. He was thrown into the bushes, so he's coming out of the bushes, and he's going, can I come with you guys? So we go, oh, gee, he found us. So it's kind of like the kid on the block you don't want to play with. We go, hey, you got to behave yourself if you're going to come. So we go to this club. We say, all right, everybody meet, you know, 3 o'clock closing time, out front and everything else. So I'm coming down at about 10 to 3. Right. And I see this guy getting knocked around on the, it was like a red carpet stairs and everything. And it goes down into a marquee over it. And it's Inge. He's getting the shit kicked out of him again by four black Turks. This was incredible. So there's one guy pulls out a knife. Now I'm half drunk. I've got the new leather jacket wrapped around me. I'm trying to get Inge away. John pulls the car up. We're in Norm's car. We jump in John Norm's car. Glenn jumps in the front. I'm in the back with Inge, but the sunroof is open, and these guys are jumping in the car.
That's punching, a funny story.
Punching through the car.
With knives.
Yeah, they got the knife. Everything. It's crazy, right? And John's stopping at a red light. I go, run the light. You know, kidding me? So they grab Inge's Rolex. Well, I think he had two on, one on each arm. And they grab that, and that's going out. That's going out the window now, out the sunroof. So I go, John, you got to step on it and jump these guys off the car because they're hanging all over the
car. It's like The Walking Dead.
So I took one shot at his face, this one guy's face, and I popped him in the nose, and he let go. And we got back to the Sheridan unarmed. It was insane if you were there. It was absolutely
that
insane.
That is insane.
No, it's insane.
Well, on that, we can't top that. So
no,
on that note, we got to wrap this thing up. But
thanks for having
everybody,
cool,
check out
Thank
Rated
you,
X. The album is out now. Carmine Appice, Jolynn Turner, Tony Franklin, Carl Cochran. Support new rock music. Keep this stuff going. You want to see live shows? You got to buy it. So get out there and check it out. It's available now.
Amen.
Rated X is the name of the band, and be sure to check it out, guys. We'll do this again because there's so many stories.
Yes,
we only scratched the surface. But thank you, and great to see you both.
You
thank
too.
You.
Thank you, Eddie.
Thanks for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.